Welcome to another episode of In the Pen, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, a podcast about relievers. I'm back from my all-star break hiatus, Count Osuga, joined as always by Rick Graham and Jake Crumpler. And don't worry, we're not going to be trading them to another podcast. I know it's trade deadline season, but I think these two have their roles secured. But we'll keep an eye on Hug Watch over the next hour or so. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. Yeah, I like my spot here. Pretty comfortable. Hopefully, we can stick around and just give you the reliever news for the All-Star break.
Hey, I think I could net a pretty good return. I think my guys might do well shipping me out, especially mm-hmm. if the right deal comes through. I think we're going to have a lot of calls coming through asking for me, but make sure you wait for the right deal because I think we could really improve the team.
We could sell high on you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Bubba and I have been in talks to get you permanently over to the weekend podcast, but you know, we're still in discussions. So I'll keep your bags packed. You know, we might have to do a mid-show replacement, but we'll see. But speaking of trades, on this episode with the trade deadline a week and a half away, we know all the talk is about Shohei Ohtani and will he stay and will he go? And I'd love to know that, but on this episode, we're not going to answer that because everyone else in their right mind is going to be talking about that. We're going to do what we always do, talk about relievers. We're going to break down who's likely to be on the move, guys need to be watching for. Do they have a closer job if they're moved? Who replaces them for those positions? Sellers, buyers, all of that, and how that impacts the bullpens on this show. But as always, we'll start with some of the latest news, including the first of hopefully many trades for us with the trade deadline. We'll start, as we do always, with the injuries. We'll run through it pretty quickly because none of them are the major impact moves, but still some notable names. AJ Minter placed on the 15-day IL with left shoulder inflammation, Josh Spores from the 15-day IL with right biceps tendonitis, and Chris Davinsky on the 15-day IL with a strained right hamstring. So Rick, we'll start with you. Any fantasy impact there? I know most of them refer holds leagues, but anybody who rises up in terms of holds due to these losses?
Yeah, really thins out the Braves bullpen, I guess, because they already lost Nick Anderson, so now they're down another setup man. You got to think they're going to go out and add a reliever at the deadline. For now, it looks like Kirby Yates should get some more chances for holds, and Joe Jimenez is kind of working his way back into that role as well. But yeah, the depth's kind of been being tested right now in that bullpen, and again, the same with Josh Spores. I think that's another spot where I don't think the Rangers are done adding relievers. I think they're still gonna probably add another right-handed, you know, relief option to the mix with Chapman and Smith holding down the ninth and eighth right now.
Yeah, the Braves are gonna have to send out the bat signal to Jesse Chavez to get him back because that bullpen is getting really thin in Atlanta right now. Yeah, I think you mentioned the right guys. The Rangers could definitely use another addition there, especially with Jose Leclerc being basically the only right-handed option that you can really trust right now. So they could definitely use some more guys there. And the Angels have been sort of pushed out of contention at this point with Trout going on the aisle and stuff. So we'll be looking at different trades, but I think they're going to be shipping guys out of their bullpen. So I don't think Davinsky going down is going to be somebody that they're going to be looking to replace externally. Definitely see some guys get called up, but a lot of their young guys are on the IL right now. I think this just gives Jose Soriano and Jacob Webb a lot more opportunities in the high leverage situations at the end of the game.
Yeah. I think Davinsky too. Like you said, he might be an option to be moved because he's on a 1-year contract. So I don't know how. Obviously, the injury doesn't help if the Angels do, you know, decide to sell some pieces. I still think Davinsky would be one of the names to go.
Hey, let's not talk about the Angels as not a playoff contender. They just swept the extremely high powered New York Yankees.
They should be. They shouldn't sell Ohtani. They should, you know, make a run, see what happens. Why not? Once in a lifetime player on your roster.
Yeah, and you've had him already. Don't like screw up the rest of your whole organization because you want to hold on to a guy for 2 months on a run that's like not going to come to fruition. It's going to be so disappointing when they don't make the playoffs and they're like, shoot, we're just going to get an extra draft pick in the draft, and it's going to be the worst feeling ever because you had him for 5.5 years. Might as well trade him now before things get bad. I don't think these last 2 months without him are going to be that different. if you have him and you don't make the playoffs, then
yeah, if there's no chance, if there's 0%, like a 0% chance he won't resign or he will resign, then
there's no shot he's resigning.
You never know.
I don't. He wants to win games. The Angels have proven they cannot win games right now. Their playoff chances are 13%. They're just one game over 500 right now. There's a possibility, but with Trout out, I think it's really hard to envision that happening. I want with all my heart for them to make the playoffs. I know Callan said we're not going to do the Ohtani talk, and here we are doing the Ohtani talk. But I want with all my heart for them to make the playoffs, but I have no reason to believe that they will. And I don't. If I were a fan of that team, as much as I would want to see Shohei Ohtani on this team for the last 2 months, if I really cared about my team that much, I would want them to keep the future positive by sending him out and getting a massive return, because that's going to be an unprecedented rental return there.
Yeah. And since we are going into that talk with Ed, if I'm the betting man, I will guess he will not be on the Angels by August 1st. I think he will be dealt. Someone's going to blow him away with an offer. A guy like that becomes available. It's like when Soto became available. Someone's going to step up. It's a different circumstance. Ohtani's on a rental, but someone will pony up the package that the Angels are looking for. I don't know who, but I expect him to not be an Angel come August 1st.
Orioles.
Please. I mean, that'd be fun for baseball, but God, I don't want another Hillies team to get him. But why should I care? The Yankees aren't going anywhere. On to the other transactions, since we don't have Ohtani news to talk about. The first is an actual trade, and we'll see if this has impact. Speaking of the Orioles, Shintaro Fujinami was traded from the Oakland A's to the Baltimore Orioles. Don't look at the surface numbers, because it has not been a great first season in the MLB for Fujinami, but you look under the hood, he's been pitching a lot better lately. Now he goes to a contender with the Orioles. Maybe he can help get the ball to Felix Bautista. Does this have any fantasy viability? Is Fujinami someone you want to, you know, put on a watch list to trim that in like holds leagues?
Yeah, he definitely, I think, gets a little bit of a bump in holds leagues potentially. Depending on how things shake out, I know they already have Coulomb and Yennier Cano pretty much locked into those, you know, top two setup roles behind Felix Bautista. So even in a middle relief role, though, the way Fujinami had been pitching before the trade, he really, it's, I mean, we have talked about him a few times on this podcast. He started to figure things out, and, you know, great fastball splitter combination that doesn't, you know, just grow on trees. So there's a lot of potential in him being a good middle relief option. I don't know if there's going to be a ton of holds chances, but yeah, just someone to keep an eye on, though, because of the stuff that he possesses.
Yeah, we definitely talked about him a lot recently, because I thought he was going to take over for Trevor May, but I guess he's a free agent after this offseason, so it makes sense for them to send him out. But I think Orioles fans should definitely be excited about this one, because I think he's finally figuring things out. I've used these stats a lot in recent episodes where I stated his last 13 games, during which he's tossed 15 and a third innings. This was a guy who struggled with his command so immensely that they moved him to the bullpen, and it still didn't figure out until recently. Those 13 games, 15 innings, he's walked one batter. So that's a walk rate of just 1.7%. And it comes with a 28% strikeout rate. And that also comes with a 2.93 ERA and a 0.98 whip. His location plus is around 99, which is very, very solid. And his stuff is incredible. I know his splitter is one of the best in the game, and he's been leaning into that pitch a lot more recently as well. And so it all makes sense why he's starting to become a better pitcher. He's throwing in the zone more. He's changed his pitch mix. He's throwing harder. And going to a team like the Orioles, where not only do they have a ballpark that I really like for most pitchers, but they are great with not only unknown relievers, but all kinds of relievers. We've seen them turn so many different guys into elite bullpen arms. Even Felix Bautista, one of the best closers in baseball right now, lowest ERA in baseball. He's 28. He just debuted last year. This is sort of an out of nowhere guy who just has been turned into an elite guy. Same with Yennier Cano, who's a first time all-star. Danny Coulomb, who's not been anything before this year, and so many other guys in the past couple of years, that I think you get Fujinami over there, who's finally figuring everything out. And now he goes to a team that can help him even further. I think he could have a breakout second half. And while I don't know if he's going to be the next setup man, I think he should be, because Yennier Cano has been falling off dramatically since that first month of the season. And so I think Fujinami could really be a difference maker in that bullpen down the stretch.
Yeah, as we're recording this earlier today, Cano did blow a lead in the seventh inning for the Orioles, ended up winning the game and taking over first place, but they had a 3-1 lead and gave up two runs. So maybe they do need another arm, and I think Fujinami could be a candidate there. Over to the guys who came activated off the IL, rapid fire votes, see if they have any sort of impact. First one, maybe he can fill in for Chris Davinsky. Matt Moore activated in 15-day IL for the Angels, strained right oblique. And two Padres activated from the IL, Steven Wilson from a right pectoral strain, and Robert Suarez active from a 60-day IL with right elbow inflammation. Any fantasy viability there? Do you think these guys can matter for holds to their teams?
Steven Wilson definitely will. He's coming back, and he already has two holds since he returned from the IL. Robert Suarez is a long kind of forgotten about him. He hasn't pitched at all this year. But he did sign a pretty big extension for at least as far as, you know, setup men go this offseason. So I'm sure they're expecting him to, you know, slot right back into a high leverage role. And he should be a name to monitor in holds leagues. Let's see. It's been, you know, he hasn't pitched all year. So let's see how he looks, you know, out of the gate here. But definitely a name to look at, to keep an eye on. And Matt Moore was pitching well before the injury. So, but again, if the Angels are gonna sell, they might as well, you know, move Davinsky, Moore, Estevez, that whole bullpen, all those guys on 1-year deals. So he could find himself in a different city in about a week.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm excited to see what Robert Suarez can do. He really struggled during his rehab stint across three levels of the minors, gave up a lot of runs in a short amount of time. So hopefully he can come back up and figure it out. He was incredible last year, but he's not the spry young minor league pitcher who made his major league debut last year that you would think he is. He's 32 now, so there's definitely some possibility that he could regress. He was great last year, 2.27 ERA. He struck out 32% of the batters he faced. So he's definitely a guy that has a high ceiling. It'll be interesting to see if he can reach that across the final 2 months. I think it might take him too long to really get into the groove of things, and he might be a guy that's a difference maker in the playoffs if the Padres do somehow eke into the playoffs. But I don't think he's going to be huge for fantasy. But yeah, Steven Wilson, Matt Moore have been racking up the holds this year. And while Moore isn't really guaranteed to remain that if he does get traded, I think both guys are very solid holds options as of now.
Moore came right in, and I believe on was Wednesday against the Angels with a 4-run lead, but against the Yankees lineup in the eighth inning to get the ball to what would have been Estevez while they were trying to preserve him. So pretty exciting to see him back. He was a big thing, and I want to see what the Padres do. So definitely some names you want to circle, keep an eye on. Next two guys are definitely guys you want to circle, keep an eye on, because they have been some flashy stuff. Alex Baez activated from the minors for Texas Rangers and was immediately thrust into setup man role to get the ball to Aroldis Chapman in the ninth. Pralander Barroa recalled from minors from the Mariners. He's had some flashy stuff in the minors as well. And then all-star Joe Mantiply. We all have to mention anytime he does something, he was activated from recalled from the minors as well for Diamondbacks. So I know Mantiply, he's in a crowded bullpen, so we might not talk about him too much, but for Spayaz and Barroa, some flashy stuff. Are you guys interested in them at all?
Yeah, I mean, definitely worth monitoring. Yeah, Spayaz has got, never heard of the name, and then watching him, yeah, he's got some really good stuff. Barroa's been kind of around. It's a tougher bullpen, I think, to get into the holds mix in with the Seattle, but Spayos, like we said, Spores is down. They only have Jose Leclerc for right-handed options, so he could find a way into that bullpen, into that, you know, high leverage mix if they don't go out and make another move.
Yeah, I'm loving all the call-ups that have been happening recently. We got to see Abner Uribe and some other guys get called up recently, and these two are sort of in that same boat. Spayos on the Rangers has had a very solid season in the minors across Double A and Triple A. He struck out a lot of batters. He was over 40% at Double A and over 38% at Triple A. And Barroa is super interesting. He is a former Giants prospect, and he looked incredible in spring training. I don't know if you guys remember that. He was just throwing just some nasty stuff. I think he throws from a funky arm angle too, so it makes it difficult to see what he does. He's sort of a converted starter to a reliever, but he's been great at AAA or at AA this year as a 23-year-old, 2.93 ERA, 36% strikeout rate. That's a legit guy. I trust the Mariners with their pitcher development as well. So I'm excited to see what he can do. He could probably go multiple innings as well. That's pretty enticing. That bullpen though is pretty stacked. I don't see him getting into high leverage situations, but they'll definitely be fun guys to watch to see if you'll have interest in speculating on them next year to jump into that high leverage roles.
Definitely. I'm trying to see that. I loved watching Spaz last night and Wednesday night. He goes winning in 2/3, 2 strikeouts immediately of 3 straight all-stars. Just welcome to the show. Get thrust right in the mix and got the ball to Aroldis Chapman. His stuff has been pretty electric, so both of them are going to be a lot of fun, and it wouldn't shock me. I agree. We might, more likely Spaz gets into a higher leverage role than Baroa, but Baroa's stuff, you know, I've heard good things about it. He touches 100 miles per hour, so I'm definitely excited to see that. And let's see what all-star Joe Mantiply can do. Like I said, got to mention that one more time before we move on. As always, let's get to the risers and fallers in the ranks before we get into the meat and potatoes of this episode. Probably won't get too as in-depth into them, but as always, there's some notable names that aren't going to be talked about for trade deadlines. So, Rick, we'll start with you. Who has been one of the biggest risers from the past week?
Yeah, so, I mean, still kind of a short-ish week coming off the All-Star break, but we did see a couple relievers with closers with 4 saves already since the All-Star break, and you know, one is Devin Williams, who just was lights out this weekend with the Brewers sweeping the Reds in a huge, you know, huge home series for them. Again, I was a little skeptical. There's you know, the command issues, and he's really been playing with fire with, you know, walking as many guys as he does, but I don't believe he walked anyone this past weekend. Strikeouts were there. You know, the striker rate has dipped this year, but he was, you know, missing bats at a high rate this weekend. So hopefully we see a big second half from him if he can, you know, stay healthy. And this Brewers team does look, I mean, Corbin Burnes is like the Corbin Burnes we've expected right now. You know, he looks like he's back. So this Brewers team is set to make a run, and it's going to be their pitching staff that carries them, starting with the, you know, rotation going into the bullpen.
Yeah, it's sort of like the luck is turning around for Williams. He was pitching pretty solidly throughout the whole first half. The saves just weren't coming, and now they finally are here as the Brewers have been playing closer games. So it's nice to see Williams finally getting the save opportunities that he deserves.
Yeah, he's been great. We've been waiting for, you know, Devin Williams is always this high guy we always like to watch. It's great stuff, but we've been waiting for him to really look like the extremely dominant Devin Williams. It's been nice to see that. And like Rick said, they're a first place team. They're going to push more playoff push. Devin Williams is going to be part of that. So it's good to see him getting back to his usual self. Jake, on to you. To one of the other biggest risers from the week.
I'm going with my homer pick. I'm going with Camilo Doval. He is another one of those guys that's got 4 saves since the All-Star break, and he currently leads baseball in saves. He's up to 30 now. He's gotten a pretty solid edge on the second place runner up in the saves category, and he's been incredible this year. The stuff is really great. He's got the clear closer role in San Francisco. The Giants have been very good this year, and I don't see him slowing down at all. And he just keeps racking up the saves, and I think he's very close to being a top 5 reliever. Rick's got him number 6 on his list, but I feel pretty confident in Camilo Doval for the rest of the year.
Yeah, even at 6, I mean, that whole group is very, I have a lot of confidence in for the time, at the time, you know, the time being, at least. Things can change quickly in this, you know, closer market. But Doval, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we haven't seen, you know, it's hard to see. You don't see 40 save years a lot anymore. And he's looks like he's destined to break that 40 save mark this year, as long as he stays healthy. So, yeah, he's been, you know, the change he's made with his, you know, pitch mix, throwing, you know, going with the slider a little bit more, really helped him out this year. Strikeout numbers are insane. And, you know, he's been able to command his stuff. So, yeah, nothing really bad we can say about Camilo Doval right now.
No, and he had that day on Tuesday when he had two saves in one day because they continued via rained or suspended game, and then he got the save the very next day. He's been great, and we talked about him a lot through the season. Wouldn't shock me, like Jake said, if he ends up top five reliever for this season or a top five season going into 2024. But another closer, same position, same top five sort of thing. We'll wrap up another guy with three saves in 3 days, four saves since we last recorded. It's Johan Duran. There's not too much more you need to say about that. He's really good. Four saves, four strikeouts in four innings. Look at his PL page. So much in the red. Strikeout stuff's there. He's in the top. He got 16 saves on the season. The Twins are another team that they're not as good as the Giants or the Brewers, really, but they're in first place in a middle of the pack AL Central. But if you're going to be winning games, the Twins are another team that's going to be doing it with their pitching. They're going to need Duran to be great, and he's taking that job and running with it, and he's been awesome of late. So just want to give him the one last shout out to Duran as he's gone from this borderline. We'll see if he's closer to top five in Rick's ranks, and no sign of relinquishing that anytime soon.
Yeah, it's very, like you said, it's similar to Devin Williams with a team that's struggled, but they're still first place in the division, so they're gonna Duran's gonna have chances hopefully the rest of the way, hopefully more than he had in the first half. And we'll talk about all the trade deadline stuff, and I know I've heard a lot of people mention that he might be a candidate to lose his job depending on what the Twins do, but I don't necessarily see that happening.
That would be sort of goofy unless you want to use him as like that high leverage guy.
That's the either lessening his innings or using him earlier in games, kind of like how they did last year. But yeah, he's been a rock for them at the back end of the bullpen. So no matter where he's being used, he's gonna have some value.
Is there anybody with better stuff than Doval or Duran in the majors?
I think from a visual, just watching it, I would say no.
I can't think of anybody off the top of my head. I mean, if we still have the nastiest pitchers article, I'm sure Duran would be on it three, four times a week. He's just a must watch. If he's in, I try and flip on a Twins game as soon as I can just to see that stuff. It's a lot of fun, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But on to some guys who still have good stuff, but unfortunately have been a little bit shaky lately and have unfortunately fallen down in the ranks. Jake, we'll start with you this time. Who is someone who you see as the biggest faller in the ranks this week?
Well, I've got Scott McGuff in my home league, and it's been sort of hard to hold on to him recently. I'm not at risk of dropping him, but I am starting to lose confidence that he's going to maintain that role if the Diamondbacks do add to the bullpen at the deadline, because he's really struggled recently, which is unfortunate after finally looked like he was finally getting all his stuff together. In his last few appearances since basically 6/28, June 28th, he's allowed 10 runs, 9 earned in that time. He's not having a good time. It's a 12 ERA across 6.2 innings pitch, and it's bumped his ERA up considerably. And it's just sort of what we were seeing at the beginning of the season, where he can have these blowups. And I thought maybe he had gotten over that because he had a super long stretch of about a couple months where he just didn't blow up at all. But this shows that the volatility of the splitter is something that will hurt McGuff from time to time, and he doesn't have the best control to make up for it with his fastball.
Yeah, 14 hits and seven walks since June 26th. That's over 8 innings pitched, and that's the 9 earned runs. Just 1 save since then, and all the meanwhile, Kevin Ginkle's got 2 saves in the past 3 days. So I don't know if we're gonna call that, is Ginkle's taking over the role yet? It sure looks like he has, but. Yeah, McGuff is definitely trending in the wrong direction, and no matter what, even if he is able to reclaim the closer role, you have to imagine this Arizona team is the one team that I feel like we all know is going to add a pretty impact reliever at the deadline. They have to. That's like one of the, outside of maybe another starter, that reliever is definitely their biggest need. So, then the question comes down, does that guy who comes in take over the closer role, or are they going to find someone internally by then? It's getting close, and McGuff's just struggling at the wrong time, where I honestly think you can possibly drop him at this point. I don't know if he's going to be able to retake the closer role by the end of the month, but you know, if anything, I think Ginkle's the option to roster right now.
Rick, let's move over to you as I try and decide what I want to do with Scott McGuff in my home league. But who's another one of your followers for this week?
Yeah, this is another tough one in Texas, and it's, you know, Will Smith hasn't pitched bad, and he actually has two saves this week, but Aroldis Chapman also has two saves this past week, and I think at best this is going to become, you know, some sort of committee, and I don't think Will Smith has the, you know, he's not helping that much with strikeouts like Chapman is. I think if you're going to roster one of these two, you want to be Chapman right now. Not saying to drop Will Smith necessarily, but in shallower leagues, maybe it's, you know, he's probably in the back third or so of closer options, you know, out of the top 30. So I still think, you know, he's going to factor into saves, but I think Chapman's kind of going to be the closer moving forward. The bulk of the save chances that this team gets.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think you drop him right away, but the committee is going to be interesting, to say the least. And, you know, we'll talk about the trade portion of the show. It wouldn't shock me if the Rangers had another reliever and make this even more of a crowded mess. But yeah, I don't think you drop Will Smith per se, but definitely has to fall with the acquisition of Chapman and him getting thrown right back into the closer mix. And for me to wrap it up, it's another messy situation, but out in Miami, AJ Puck has not looked like himself lately. He hasn't gotten a save since Saturday the 8th against the Phillies. Last time out, he only went 2/3 of an inning, 3 runs, didn't strike out a batter, hit, just has not looked good. Gave up runs in 3 out of his last 5 outings. There's starting to be some questions throughout Twitter about whether Tanner Scott might be getting some opportunities. We saw him do it last year, but with a different manager. So I don't know if I'm ready to save that immediately, but
I am.
You know, yeah, it's been rough for AJ Puck, and the Marlins are playing a lot of close games. So I think he definitely has to be someone. I don't know if you dropped him yet, but I'm definitely concerned with what I've seen from him lately.
I wouldn't drop him yet, but yeah, it's concerning, and definitely Tanner Scott makes an interesting speculative ad. He's not rostered in a lot of leagues. He should be available unless you're in, you know, a deeper 16 team or NL only type format. I think now would be the time to roster him and just see how things play out over the next week or two. This is another team, I think, right behind Arizona that needs to add a reliever, preferably a right-handed closer type. And as we're about to, you know, get into, there are some pretty good options available. It's just going to come down to what, you know, what's Miami willing to pay, and, you know, how serious are they about making a playoff run this year?
Yeah, I'll just say I called it 2 weeks ago, and we can move on.
All right, yeah, we'll move on. Let's take a quick break, and we get back. Let's get into the big story. Start breaking down these possible movers, who's going to be gone, who's going to take over the spot, all of that and more on In the Pen.
This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? Then you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick the 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100, so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy. Fantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
All right, it's time for our annual trade deadline primer. Week and a half to go. The moves have started. We want to get you a good feel as to whose names could be on the move, who's you, someone you want to circle on your watch list, try and get before their move, try and get after this guy's move, so you're the first to get the replacements for those teams. We're going to go through the sellers first, go for guys we think could be on the move, kind of put a likelihood and try and give you some names to monitor and try and be in front of your league mates to add. So we'll start off with the Oakland A's. This one's pretty simple. Trevor May is on a one-year rental. He's been the closer of late. I think we all expect him to be moved. If we do, we'll start with the resident A's fan with you, Jake. Who do you want in Oakland, if anybody?
To trade for?
To replace. If Trevor May is gone, who does the... Is there anybody who takes over as a favorite for saves?
It's gotten really difficult now that Fujinami's gone because that was my go-to guy for a while. If we're talking about fantasy, I don't want anybody. If we're talking about who's going to actually just take over the role if I'm the manager there, I don't know. There's like nobody that's been good this year. It's really hard to tell. Literally everybody that's been there for more than 10 innings has an ERA over 4, and only one of them has a strikeout rate over 30%. And that's Lucas Ursedge, which I think that's how it's pronounced. And he's got a 5.67 ERA. I think it's got to be Sam Moll. He's the guy who's got the most experience in the majors. He's been on the team for the longest. That he's gotten a save this year already. They used him in sort of a platoon role out of the closer spot. So I think that's your most likely opportunity to take over that role. But if we're talking about fantasy, even if he's getting a few saves, not only is he not going to pitch to good ratios or strike out too many batters, he's like 27%, which not incredible for a reliever, but the A's are about to have an even worse team as we enter the post trade deadline, because they're going to trade off some guys. And so I don't think that there's going to be too many wins to go around there. And Trevor May not even be traded. I know that he's getting saves recently, but he's been not good in terms of the surface level metrics, underlying metrics. The walk to strikeout ratio is even. He's walked the same amount of batters as he struck out, and that's 21 in 25 innings. So any team that's going to get him better have a plan. And so there's no guarantee that the A's are going to be able to get anything out of him, and they may just wait until the offseason or until next year.
Yeah, the only he's on a 1-year deal though, right? So I mean,
there's an option. It doesn't say that there is, but I remember there being an option. I'm going to look that up.
We don't have to talk about the A's too much. Whether or not May goes or not, I will say I'll give one name for this bullpen that's kind of intriguing, and that's Angel Felipe, and I'll just leave it at that.
All right, yeah, so we've learned don't really pick up an A. Maybe keep an eye on Felipe. Maybe keep an eye on Moll, but try and find your saves elsewhere. And if Trevor May gets moved, he's not going to be a closer anywhere. So he'll likely not be the most fancy viable the rest of the season. While Jake looks up Trevor May's contract situation, it's a one-year deal. Perfect. So he'll likely be moved. The question is where. And even if he does, we're not going to be too intrigued for fantasy. Over to Kansas City, where we already got the first move. Aroldis Chapman got traded, so that leaves just Scott Barlow. He's not on a one-year deal. He's a free agent in 2025, but he is 30 years old. The Royals have been trying to move him. So, Rick, do you expect Scott Barlow to be moved? If so, who steps in for Kansas City as someone you want to circle as a put him on your watch list and maybe take over for saves?
Yeah, I think this is the year. I think Barlow's a 75% chance to get moved. It doesn't make sense unless they want to wait until the offseason. But I feel like for relievers, the deadline's usually a good place to move a reliever because that's what teams are usually looking for to, shore up their bullpen for a playoff run. And they're going to, they're craving guys like Barlow with his sort of, history. And I think Carlos Hernandez should be the favorite to take over. Who knows though? They might, again, they really, I don't know why they really have an obsession with Taylor Clark there, and he's just horrible, but they love using him in high leverage role for those spots. But it should be Hernandez. Even Dylan Coleman's another interesting name, but Hernandez has pitched well pretty much all year. He struggled at the beginning of the season, but you know, after the, his last 32.2 innings, he's got a 2.44 ERA and a 0.83 WHIP, with you know a 24% K to walk rate. So, really good, and you know, 127 stuff plus rating. So, like really, really good. You know, he should be the closer for the Royals next year, and you know, for a while until they inevitably end up moving him for pieces as well in like 2026 or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel pretty confident about Hernandez taking over that role and being really good, because I think he's been pretty unlucky this year in terms of performance. He's, I think, figured everything out on the mound, and then he's just been a little bit unlucky in the field. He's got a 3.48 xFIP and a 3.75 ERA, which has been over four throughout the year. So I think his luck is finally starting to turn around. And once he takes over that closer role where he hasn't really had many save plus holds opportunities. He's had seven holds this year, which that really goes under the radar. I think he could really climb save plus hold rankings super quickly as once he takes over that role.
Now, Scott Barlow does get moved. Obviously, it needs to depend on where he goes, but do you think he'll still have fantasy viability even for a holds league?
No shot.
Not even in a holds league? In holds leagues, I think he would. Yeah.
But like, where is he going that he's going to be a holds option?
I mean, we just like Arizona, Miami.
I think even those teams, both of those teams still have guys that are better than Barlow. He's got a 4.89 ERA this year. The only reason he's been fantasy relevant is because of his role in the closer. And the only reason he's the closer is that they can get a better deal when they trade him.
I think if you get him in an organization that can develop pitching a little bit better, I think there's some stuff there to work with. But yeah, I know what you're saying.
All right, staying out in Chicago or in the Central, we'll go to the Chicago White Sox next. They've got a lot of guys that could possibly be moved, and we'll run through them quickly in terms of the one-year rentals. We got Ronaldo Lopez and Kenny Middleton, both on one-year contracts. We expect them to possibly be on the move, and they've been one of the favorites for saves. But there's other options. Liam Hendricks has a club option for 2024. Maybe he gets moved. Joe Kelly has a club option for 2024 for $9.5 million. Wouldn't shock us if he's moved. Kendall Graveman's a free agent in 2025, and Aaron Bummer has two club options. He could potentially be moved. So let's try and make sense of the Chicago White Sox situation. Do we expect a lot of movement there? After it's all shaken done, who do we expect to stay? Be the closer? Let's try and make sense of this kind of messy situation.
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of talking about it before the show. I think this White Sox team's at the point where they're kind of in need of a complete teardown and rebuild. And it starts with this bullpen, you know, this group of guys in the bullpen that all six of them could be moved. They're probably not all going to be moved, but Lopez and Middleton definitely. Kelly definitely will be, because that $9.5 million club option next year, no one's going to pick that up. So he's essentially, you know, going to be a free agent. I think Liam Hendricks depends on kind of, I'm sure they'll give him the courtesy to, you know, if he wants to go to a contender, I'm sure they'll help make that happen. But again, that's I give that about a 50% chance depending on, you know, what he's looking to do. And it does sound like he's starting to ramp up his rehab and could be back relatively soon. So he should be closing out games for someone in August. It's just a matter of who at this point.
The White Sox are really going to define this deadline. I think that's going to make it a lot of fun, because even outside of the bullpen, they have a few starters that could be on the move and a couple guys in the lineup. So that's going to be the team to watch. It's going to make all the difference in trade deadline season. But yeah, the bullpen is, I think, where they have the most talent to give up. And I think it'll be interesting to see who goes where. It's hard to like predict where a reliever is going to go, because I think every playoff team is always in need of more bullpen depth. There's no team that can really truly look you in the eyes and be like, no, we're good. We don't want anything else. And I think every team's going to be calling the White Sox to see the prices of all of these guys. Lopez, Middleton, smell you later. Joe Kelly's most likely gone, as long as he's over that injury that he's currently dealing with. And I think Kendall Graveman has the opportunity. But he still got a whole nother year of control he left. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, I think Hendricks will be the most fun to watch, because I think he's a fan favorite. It'll be interesting, like, if he does go to another team, even if he's not the closer, I think the fans of whatever team get him are going to be really happy. So this will be a good team to watch for sure.
One word answer before we move on. Who, after this mess is over, who's closing games for White Sox? Who stays? What's your early prediction for that?
I think Graveman stays because that might be tough to sell teams on his $8 million that he's owed next year. So I think Graveman stays and winds up being the closer. But yeah, Gregory Santos is right there too. I think if all six of these guys move, then it's Santos' job to lose.
I say Hendricks doesn't move and he's the closer when he comes back.
I will agree with Jake. But let's move over to Colorado, where, again, a lot of names. A lot of wonder rentals, Brent Suter, Brad Hand, Pierce Johnson. I think we could go quickly and say none of these guys will be fantasy viable if they're moved. Agree or disagree?
Probably not. Yeah, I'm going to say no.
Probably not. We've seen Suter be somewhat fantasy viable in the past, mostly as a guy that would come in the fifth or sixth innings and vulture saves. He had 12 wins in 2021 with the Brewers, so that's about all he really does. He's not a huge holds guy. He peaked at 8 in that same year, 2021. But yeah, I think Brad Hand probably has the highest likelihood of becoming someone that's fantasy relevant just because he could be whatever team he ends up with. He could be their team's best left-handed reliever.
The real question then becomes the final option for a team, Daniel Bard, who's a free agent after next season. He is 38 years old, has $9.5 million owed to him. Maybe he's on the move, but so at this point, when we're looking at Colorado, do we expect Bard to be moved? If these moves happen, does Bard become the favorite for saves? Is it still Justin Lawrence? What's our read in Colorado at this point?
I'm still the only person I have any interest in even thinking about rostering right now is Justin Lawrence there. It would shock me if someone, they would probably have to eat all of that money that Bard's owed in order to find someone to take him to take him on. And I don't know if the prospect return even at that point would be worth dealing Bard. So they're probably stuck with him for the next 2 years.
No, the Rockies love Daniel Bard. There's no way they're trading him. That's their favorite player on their team. I think they'll hold on to him, and Justin Lawrence is going to maintain that role.
They promised to be more active this year, so hey, you never know.
That doesn't mean you trade franchise icon Daniel Bard. Chris Bryant in the second year of his mega deal.
bring him to New York. I'll eat that contract and put him in the outfield. We need some facelifts, so let's do it. But they'll be an interesting team. We've heard this before from the Rockies, so yeah, he'll be more active, and it's just dumb move after dumb move. So I'm expecting the same from
more them. They'll active probably buy, in acquiring players.
Yeah, they'll acquire another dumb contract that's not worth. They'll trade for another reliever. They'll be the one to get Liam Hendricks for some dumb reason, and at least he'll get saves there. But on the Washington, where again, kind of messy situation. Our fan favorite may be on the move. The only 1 year rental is Carl Edwards Jr., which same situation we said for Colorado. We don't expect to have much fantasy viability if he is moved. But here come the other options. There's three guys who are going to be free agents in 2026, and this is a team that maybe it's time to capitalize on some high upside play of it, of the fact that they're selling high and pitching well with Kyle Finnegan, Tanner Rainey, and Hunter Harvey. So do we expect any of these guys to be on the move? Who ends up still in Washington and the favorite for saves after this happens?
That's going to be a good question because it makes sense to trade Kyle Finnegan at this point. He's 32 years old, only has 2 years left after the season. This is like probably the highest you can sell him at. I think I don't see a reason for them to keep him around really. So I think Finnegan is gone, and then, you know, Rainey's out for the year, and Harvey, it sounds like Harvey probably, it was doubtful. He probably pitches again this year. I don't think there's any reason to rush him back. So who does that leave to close out games in Washington? I have no idea. It's like another Oakland A's situation almost, even though this team has been playing a little bit better. I guess Mason Thompson maybe, but he is very sketchy. He's, you know, he has good weeks and then he has just disastrous weeks. So, it's not really anything worth chasing here. If even with Finnegan as the closer, it's still, you know, at your own risks type situation.
Yeah, I think Hunter Harvey's probably going to stay around. He's got the only possibility of like still being good when he's when the Nationals are good again, because he's still 28. But like you said, he's a free agent after the next 2 years. I think Finnegan is probably going to be on the move. I think this is a good time to sell him. He's been very good since a couple blowups to start the year, 1.88 ERA in his last 38 innings pitch. So I think this is a great time to sell him, especially because you're going to get a larger return because he does still have those extra years of control.
Yeah.
And if Carl Edwards Jr. can come back healthy, I think he should be on the move as well. But I think Hunter Harvey's going to stay and hold on to that closer role.
We got a trio of NL Central teams coming up next, and we'll start with the Pittsburgh Pirates, who were a great story at the beginning of the season, but have since found their way back to the basement and will likely be sellers at the deadline. Question is, do they move pieces in the bullpen? Nobody is on a rental. The biggest name is David Bednar, of course, who's a free agent in 2027. It's been a back and forth. He's a fan favorite in Pittsburgh, but it's a reliever on a very expendable contract. So do we expect him to be on the move? And if so, who takes over for Pittsburgh?
I put it at 60% chance he gets moved. That's probably too high because they don't, Ben Charrington usually doesn't make these types of moves, but I think that window in Pittsburgh is not, it's not in the next two to three years. I don't think it's getting close. It's getting closer, but I mean, it depends on when, it's like, when is Paul Skeens going to be, you know,
next year.
Maybe next year. Is he going to turn them around in 1 year? No, it's probably like 25, 26 when they're, you know, doing things. So I don't know. I still think you can sell high on Bednar here. You can, you know, you have other options who are pretty good in that bullpen that you can, you know, have moving forward. And I just think what Bednar can get at the deadline this year, given the season he's had and just the other relief options available to, you know, when you think about it, there's at least eight teams that could definitely use a reliever. I think you could get a really good, you know, return for Bednar now, and probably the best return you can get for duration of, you know, his time with Pittsburgh.
Yeah, those are some really fair points. I think trading Bednar now would really get a huge return, but I think I have a more positive view on when this team's going to be good. I think next year and especially the year after that, 2025, I think they're going to be really good. And I think so 2025 and 2026 could be years where Bednar is the guy closing out games for a competitive Pirates team. And I don't think they would want to have to go out and get somebody else. And so holding on to Bednar, I think, would be the smartest decision for them, though. Like you're saying, they could get a huge return there. The other guys, Holderman's got that Clay Holmes feel, but I don't think the Pirates want to make that mistake again and trade a guy with this much control left who gets ground balls at the rate that he does while throwing as hard as he does. So I don't think they make that move. I think the Pirates are quiet in terms of the relief pitching trade front.
I think so too. If I'm betting man, Bednar will stay. I tend to agree with Jake. I don't know if it's 2024 or 2025, but it's nice to see him calling up Henry Davis, Andy Rodriguez, making those moves to prospects. So their window is starting to open. It's just need a little thing, get O'Neill Cruz back. We never know what's going to happen with them. I think they'll try and give it one more year with Bednar, and maybe next season they're in a similar boat. Maybe they make that move, but the haul could be great, but I just don't think they're ready to make that move yet. But we'll see. If Bednar does go, of course, then yeah, he's going to be viable wherever he goes, whether it's to be a closer right away or as a setup man. Over to St. Louis, where we have some good options there in terms of a rental. Jordan Hicks has been taking over as a closer for the Cardinals of late, and he's on a rental. And the Cardinals have already said that they are going to be moving pieces. They're going to be making some moves and selling. So it's very likely that Jordan Hicks has moved. Chris Stratton also on a one-year deal, and Giovanni Gallegos is a club option in 2025, so he may be on the move. So when all this mess is over, what's going to happen in St. Louis? Who's someone we should be keeping an eye on in terms of taking over? Do we expect Hicks to move, etc.?
Yeah, I think Hicks, unless they are able to kind of come up with some sort of long-term extension, I think Hicks is definitely on the way out. He might be the best available closer, depending on who else is, you know, who else is actually really available. So they should still get a nice return for him, even for just 2 months. So, you know, Gallegos, I think, probably stays because all the talk from St. Louis, you know, is that they're just trying to move on from 1 year contract, you know, guys on 1 year contracts and kind of retool for next season. And build around that. So I think Gallego stays and probably ends up closing out games after Hicks moves. Still hasn't been, there hasn't been a lot of news about when Ryan Helsley will be back. And at this point, you know, there's no real reason to rush him. So I'd say Gallegos is the closer after in St. Louis after August.
Yeah, I got to agree on all fronts there. I think Hicks is going to be the biggest closer dealt at the deadline, and Gallegos probably stays in town. I think Chris Stratton is going to go to the Rays. That just sounds like a Rays guy. Yeah, he's just solid, and you just don't really think about him. And you're like, why would the Rays be interested in Chris Stratton? And then they turn him into somebody crazy, and you're like, oh, that's why.
Yep, Rays are going to Ray. They'll make some reliever move where it's like, why? Oh, wait, that's why. But yeah, I think Hicks can be a great haul, and I'm excited to see where he goes at this point. Wrapping up the NL Central in terms of these teams, Jake's favorite from preseason, Michael Fulmer's on a one-year rental and likely to be moved. The Cubs are kind of middle of the pack, but we expect them to at least move some of the bullpen arms. And then there's relievers with longer-term contracts that maybe they can try and sell high on. Mark Leiter Jr., Julian Merriweather, and Adbert Alzolay, all names we've mentioned on this show throughout the season. So when all said and done in Chicago, does it stay as put? Who's the favorite for saves for the Cubs?
Yeah, I think so. I would imagine Alzolay stays, and he should be the favorite for saves after the deadline. I think he's the most likely. You know, he's still, you know, on the right side of 30. He's 28. He's a free agent in 2027. So there's no reason for them to move on. And I don't think the Cubs are looking to fully reset this thing. I think they're trying to, you know, turn the ship around rather quickly. So Alzolay stays. Merriweather and Leiter, I think that's a bit more of a 50-50 chance with, you know, them being in their 30s, and you know, they've both been pitching really well this year. I think moving Leiter now makes some sense, because entering the season, let's be honest, there's really no value for Mark Leiter Jr. So, you know, he's having a career year and could get them something nice at the deadline.
Yeah, I Fulmer's probably definitely gone. I don't know if they're going to make moves of the other guys. A lot of them are in their early 30s, like Merriweather and Leiter. I think Alzolay's definitely going to stay, but I don't know. Yeah, it does seem like it would be pretty smart to sell on Leiter right now. It's just hard to tell what the Cubs are going to do. I still feel like they're undecided in terms of what they consider themselves at the deadline. They're still sort of in the race. They're 45-50, but they're only 8 games out of the division lead, which it's pretty far. They're 7% chance to make the playoffs. I think they'll probably sell, but I don't know. I feel like they've got this complex of next year is going to be different, and we should keep this bullpen together. But I think they probably should sell on Leiter Jr. I just don't know if they, I don't think they do.
The next team is another one that's kind of in a similar boat. They're 8 games under 500, so it seems like, yes, they should sell. But as we're recording this, they're only 5 games out of the AL Central. So do they try and make a run? That's the Detroit Tigers. Ideally, they'll probably be selling in their rentals or another guys who probably aren't going to be as fancy viable with Jose Cisnero and Chasen Shreve, but they do have longer term deals, Alex Lang and Jason Foley, who you can capitalize on in terms of a big haul for a team that's always seeming to be making those rebuilds. So do we expect the Tigers to move on from some of their bigger name pieces? And if so, whose names to monitor there?
Yeah, I don't expect Lang or Foley to move, but the one of those guys, I think if like there's going to be that type of, you know, Clay Holmes or Scott, you know, Efros type of trade that is like, oh, that's kind of surprising. He had like, you know, 5 years left and 4 years left on his deal. I think it might be with the Tigers moving one of these two. I think Foley, you could capitalize. You might be able to get a nice return for, in what could be the best year of his career. I mean, he is young. He's on the younger side, but he's you know, not exactly someone who strikes out a lot of guys. There could be, you know, I'm not sure how dependable he's going to be moving forward. And same with Lang. Lang's, you know, strikes out a ton of guys, but he has very shaky command. So I wouldn't be shocked if they moved one of them just because the return is so great. Like the Scott, you know, Efros got the Cubs a really good return last year. So, but I'd still put that at like about 40% chance at best.
Chasen Shreve will also be a member of the Tampa Bay Rays.
Oh, I love that.
There you go. That's the bold call from this episode. Chasen Shreve to the Rays. And then if that happens, we're going to see all the Chasen Shreve shares jump up, because that's just what happens. So that's going to do it for who we say are kind of for sure, not for sure sellers, but the most likely of sellers. We have a couple other teams that are kind of in limbo that we could see some names. I'll just pass it on to you guys. We'll start with you, Rick. Do you have one or two teams that are kind of in the middle ground, covering around whether we're going to be in the playoffs or not, who you could see moving some relievers, some names to monitor as a more surprising but potential movers?
Yeah, I guess it depends on what the Angels decide on doing. And if they're going to sell, they're going to move Estevez. They're going to move probably Davinsky, probably Matt Moore. Maybe someone wants Aaron Loop. I don't know. You know, the Mets say that they're not going to sell, but David Robertson could probably get them a nice return. And I don't see why they don't. They're not going to make the playoffs this year. It's not going to happen. There's been talk about Kenley Jansen being moved in Boston. I really doubt that. I don't think he's going anywhere. He'll be back next season. The team we didn't mention that I don't know what their plans are, and they've been pretty aggressive in adding pieces, but I think Seattle, I mean, Paul Sewell could probably get them a really good return. He's got one more year left on his deal. Or one more year before he hits one more year of arbitration before he's a free agent. So, you know, they could probably get a really nice, you know, return for him this deadline. I don't think Seattle really has a chance to make the playoffs at this point. They would have to have a pretty good run in the second half. But yeah, they I know Sewald's a popular guy there and he's been pitching really well. So, I'd say probably less than 50% chance he gets moved.
I think the Padres and Mets are probably the teams that are going to be the biggest difference makers at the deadline. And I think both of these teams should be selling. They're sort of in the same boat, but I don't think they should be selling big. I don't think they should go like trade Juan Soto or Pete Alonso or anything like that, guys that still have another year of control left. But the guys that are going to be rentals, especially in the bullpen, I don't see why you wouldn't send them out. I think that leaves David Robertson, Adam Ottavino on the board. On the Mets side, I think Brooks Raley could also be on the move, though he does have a 2024 club option, which may make him more appealing as a trade as a trade guy. But also sure, Josh Hader. Yeah. Josh Hader's the big one. He's a free agent.
Yeah. I was gonna say with Ottavino though, he's got a player option that I think is like $6.5 million, and I'm not sure that could scare teams away. So I don't think he's a realistic chance to get moved.
Sure.
Yeah, and I'll throw out as the Yankee homer, the Yankees as a team that's kind of in limbo. They've talked about there's been rumors that they're gonna buy, sell, they're gonna retool, whatever the case may be, but they're gonna be moving some pieces. And maybe that comes from the bullpen and trying to restructure some contracts. Wandy Peralta, something like that, maybe could be on the move. I don't know with them, but let's keep an eye on the Yankees as well and possibly for next. So we'll take one final break. We'll go over to the buyers and guys whose jobs will therefore be on the line because of these acquisitions. So we'll take a break, get back to that on In the Pen. All right, we talked enough about the sellers and the more fantasy viable in terms of guys who are going to be losing their jobs in terms of getting moved over. But if teams that buy are looking for closers, let's run through some of those teams, the guys whose jobs are in jeopardy. Rick, let's start with you. Give me a couple teams who you're looking at to be buying at the deadline. I know most teams do buy, but closers whose jobs are most in jeopardy in terms of buying at the deadline.
Yeah, I think Arizona is definitely number one. They need to find, you know, I would love to see Liam Hendricks there. I don't know if that's going to happen, if they would take on that money or what would have to happen there. But they do have some, you know, available prospects that they can definitely move and not just completely destroy. I know it's going to be a long-term thing in Arizona. They're just getting started, but they can move some pieces to get an impact reliever. And I think, you know, you get a good reliever, you get another starter in there, and then you just see what happens. And that team could be could go on a run in September and October.
I think the Rays and Braves are probably teams that are going to be active at the deadline. I don't think either of them are going to be changing who their closer is. The Rays got Fairbanks. I feel pretty solid about him. And the Braves got Raisel Iglesias. There's not too many relievers better than him, but they will be filling out the depth, especially for the Braves with Minter and Nick Anderson going down. And for the Rays, who I think are always looking for anybody. And, you know, like I said, they're getting Chase and Shreve. They're getting Chris Stratton.
Yeah, and I'll throw out, we talked about the Marlins and the Rangers at the beginning of the show, with Puck struggling, with the Chapman move and the loss of Josh Spores. Those are teams who are looking for relievers, so wouldn't shock me there if those jobs get on the line there. And we talk about it a lot throughout the season of them probably getting a reliever, and now is the time. The Los Angeles Dodgers, Evan Phillips has been very great, but they lost Daniel Hudson again. Bruzar Gradel has been good in his sort of role, but would it shock anybody if they're the big team that gets a closer there? Because it's what the Dodgers do. They always seem to get to have the pretty good trade deadlines. So keep an eye on the Dodgers and your Evan Phillips shares. It wouldn't shock me if they maybe don't get the biggest fish in the world, but they get a good reliever to compete with saves for Evan Phillips, and he goes into another high leverage fireman type role.
Yeah, kind of reminds me of Chris Martin last year or something like that, you know, where it's like, oh, that's really kind of a not a really an important move. But then he ended up being like their best reliever down the stretch. So, yeah, I Dodgers are definitely going to add. It's just it might not be a huge name, but it's going to be someone who's going to be impactful in that bullpen.
Yep, I'll agree with that. Any other, you know, surprise teams? We talk about the Yankees. Who knows what they're going to do? Anybody else you want to talk about as a potential buyer? We talk about these guys in limbo as sellers. Is there any fit into the buyer category?
Minnesota potentially. I've heard some you know rumblings on Twitter about Durant potentially losing his job and either, you know, to lessen his workload down the stretch or to just move him into more of a high leverage, you know, multi-inning role earlier in games. I don't really see him losing his job, but I could definitely see Minnesota adding a reliever because they're at the top of the AL Central right now.
The Reds don't really have a lot of bullpen depth, and I think they're a team that's going to be really active at the deadline because they're probably just a few moves away from being a legit title contender with the way that they've been playing. But the bullpen is definitely their weakest link, and I think while they're probably not going to replace Alexis Diaz as the closer, they could definitely use some of those middle relief guys that sort of fill out the earlier innings of the ball game.
Buck Farmer's not doing it for you as the
man. Derek Law.
Not quite.
Yeah,
that's a good one who we didn't really talk a lot about. They'll probably get somebody to get the ball to Alexis Diaz, but a lot of movers and shakers over the next few weeks, and we'll be sure to break down all of those moves as they happen at Twitter, Discord, and of course on this podcast. So we'll have plenty of instant reaction to these moves, and we'll be able to break them down all with all three of us whenever you'd like. So let's wrap up before we sign off with another edition of Who's That Closer? Maybe he got traded at a trade deadline at some point.
Oh, he got traded multiple times at the trade deadline. Yeah.
There.
All right. Edwin
Jackson.
Close. All right. This closer played from 2005 to 2017. He's a right-handed pitcher. He was drafted by the Dodgers in the second round of the 2002 draft out of a high school in Georgia, and he debuted with those Dodgers in 2005. He became an elite setup man as early as his first full season in 2006 and took over the closer role full-time midway through the 2008 campaign. This reliever peaked in 2009, in which he pitched to a 2.61 ERA with a 0.96 whip to go along with a career high 36 saves. But he fell off halfway through the next season, 2010, and that lack of success carried over into 2011. So he was not re-signed by the Dodgers as a free agent and instead signed with the Royals as a free agent, but was traded just a couple months into his tenure as a Royal to the Reds at the deadline. And he would never see more than 7 saves in a season after that. He saved just 4 games with the Reds after saving 20 plus with the Royals in that first half. He then re-signed with the Reds prior to 2013 and then was traded to the Brewers at the next year's deadline, and then was traded again at the next deadline to the Cardinals. He re-signed with the Cardinals again and finished his career in St. Louis through age 33, and that's when he retired. So to recap, this guy pitched for the Dodgers for the majority of his career, went to the Royals for a short amount of time, then had the Reds for a couple of years, went to the Brewers for a half a season and then finished out his career with a few years in St. Louis. He was a two-time All-Star, one time in 2009, that was his peak season, and one time in 2010, the season that he fell off in the second half, and he wrapped up his career with 8.7 baseball reference WAR, 3.41 ERA, a 1.25 WHIP, and 118 saves. Guys, who is that closer?
This one's not as easy.
This is a big man. I almost said Joe Blanton by accident. It's not Joe Blanton, but he's the same initials.
Correct.
I'm gonna let you guess, but I think I have an idea in my head, but I feel like it's wrong. Go ahead.
Jonathan Broxton.
There it is. Yep.
There you go.
Okay. I wasn't what I was thinking, but yeah, that makes way too much
sense
now.
Who are you
now.
Thinking?
We said JB, some reason Javier Baez came to my head, but that's not right at all. I don't know. I'm thinking of some believer, Javier.
Pedro Baez.
Thank you. Yeah. PB. Yes. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay.
PB. Yeah. I don't know why I said Javier Baez. It's 10:30 on a Thursday night. My brain is starting to get fried, but yeah, Broxton, that makes a lot more sense. That was a good one.
He had a very short peak, but I just remember because that's when I first started playing MLB The Show. And so that's like how I remember a lot of guys from that 2009-2010 season. And he was one of the best closers in the game in 2009. So I think highly of Broxton.
Very underrated rated reliever. Good call.
I did not even remember him as a Royal at all. That just blocked it out. I remember the Cardinals and Reds towards like the end, the Brewers, and of course the Dodgers, but Royals, I don't remember at all. But
me neither.
Now I'm hoping to potentially use him in Immaculate Grid.
It's a good call out. He debuted really young. Wow, 21 for a reliever is pretty young. But yeah, he had some good years for sure.
Yeah, it's a good one, huh? Stumped me, that's for sure. But now that you say it, makes a lot of sense. But before we go, we'll wrap up as we always do. You guys, let us know where we can find you on Twitter, any other work going on as we get into this point in the season where we're going to be able to trade some rapping.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at IamRickGraham. Working on, just the weekly rankings pretty much right now. And, you know, getting ready for the trade deadline to cause all sorts of chaos with both the closing and holds lists.
Yeah, I'm pumped for the trade deadline. I think trades are honestly one of my favorite things in all of sports. I think not just baseball, but that's like one of my favorite things. I'm a big fan of the offseason just because I love players moving around and stuff and talking about who that affects, how that affects things. And so I'm excited for our next podcast. I hope we get a lot of trades because I know it's going to be like right before the deadline, a few days before. So it'll be interesting to see how many guys have already been traded by then. But you can follow me at Jake Crumpler on Twitter. I write a reliever ranks article every week, and I also do the weekend editions of the First Pitch podcast, and I also have my own personal podcast called Free Baseball, which you can find on my Twitter, or you can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com.
You can find me at Callen_Elslager. Be hosting this podcast. I'm like Jake, love the offseason movement. I'll be locked into MLB Network, MLB Trade Rumors, Twitter, following Passan, Rosenthal, all these guys just to see some of the biggest movements.
He broke his back.
He'll find a way. The guy's a guy. He'll find a way. His thumbs still work. His phone can still work. He'll be sending out tweets. I have no doubt about that. But get well soon, Passan. I know for sure you're obviously listening to our podcast.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, hopefully we get some exciting moves and we can, react accordingly next week. But that's going to do it for this episode of In the Pen. For all of this and more, you can find us on Twitter and check us out in PL Plus and Discord. But we'll talk to you next week with hopefully some instant trade analysis.